From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. And, of course, definitely a weather situation today with livestock producers. Make sure your livestock has plenty of water, plenty of shelter, plenty of feed as well. Well, China, Japan, and Russia are racing to fill a leadership gap on trade issues following the recent U.S. fallout over the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, the trade agreement took 12 nations 7 years to negotiate, and U.S. President-elect Donald Trump pledges to end the deal on day one of his presidency. Trade experts agree. The move opens the door for a new global trade leader to emerge. Without TPP, U.S. agriculture stands to miss out on billions of dollars in exports and risks losing market share once trade deals without the U.S. are completed. China is already moving to replace the U.S. as trade champion. That according to a new report by Bloomberg News. China is talking with other nations in Asia to complete a trade deal, and China has also discussed the possibility of an agreement with Russia. However, Russia has criticized TPP and the now-failed Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership because the trade deals allegedly violate World Trade Organization rules by creating closed associations, while at the same time, Russia is touting its own regional trade proposals. While House Speaker Paul Ryan promises to provide regulatory relief during the next Congress, the Wisconsin Republican over the weekend used agriculture as an example of needing relief during a CBS 60 Minutes interview. He called regulatory relief his second priority, following a plan to repeal Obamacare. Ryan says he wants to have smarter regulations that can help grow jobs. He says we want to have a good stewardship and conservation of the environment and economic growth. For agriculture groups, the first priority when it comes to regulations is the Waters of the U.S. rule by the Environmental Protection Agency. Ryan's comments put House leadership in line with President-elect Donald Trump, as Trump opposes the rule. For now, the rule remains tied up in the federal court system, facing dozens of lawsuits, and is under a nationwide stay. Well, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some RFS issues, renewable fuel standard issues. Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Seems we have problems in the RFS. We'll talk about that right after we take a break for these words. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. While the fight against ethanol appears likely to spill into a new Congress and administration next year, two recent Government Accountability Office reports give opponents new ammunition to target the ethanol blending requirement under the renewable fuel standard. Oklahoma Republican Senator James Lankford is chairing a series of hearings by the Senate Homeland Security Regulatory Affairs Subcommittee and requested the GAO studies.
GAO noted that advanced biofuels are still too expensive for stakeholders to produce at necessary levels to meet the RFS increasing targets through 2022. With the release of the GAO reports, we have an independent government auditor's findings that confirm the stances many in Congress, including myself, have come to hold, that the RFS is not sustainable and will not meet its intended goals.
Lankford argues it's time for Congress to do away with the RFS. Ethanol allies on his panel were quick to respond. North Dakota Democrat Heidi Heitkamp calls it no surprise advanced biofuels have not reached volume or greenhouse gas reduction targets, blaming it on market uncertainty from the Environmental Protection Agency's failure to complete RFS rules on time. Iowa Republican Senator Joni Ernst argues ethanol's growing Midwest economy, saving consumers money and reducing oil imports.
It is certainly not time to hit the panic button and pull the rug out from under this burgeoning industry. We're really just getting started, is how I feel about this.
President-elect Donald Trump has indicated he will support the RFS, and during his campaign vowed to appoint a farmer-friendly EPA Administrator. While the Soil Health Partnership commemorates World Soil Day December 5th, which was yesterday, by encouraging farmers to reflect on steps they can take to make their land healthier. Michael Clements has more in this report.
The Soil Health Partnership, an initiative by the National Corn Growers Association, is helping farmers study and improve their soil conditions. Jim Iserman is a Soil Health Partnership field manager in Illinois. He says World Soil Day is a way to celebrate that work by farmers.
World Soil Day is just an awareness program that was set up a few years ago to help farmers understand a little more about the soil underneath their feet and to help to really kind of bring knowledge of soil and its importance to the general public at large.
World Soil Day celebrates the importance of soil as one of farmers' most vital resources. He says there is a renewed emphasis on soil health in agriculture as the industry begins to understand its importance to a healthy crop.
It's been something that hasn't always been thought about by mainline conventional agriculture with as much respect as it should be, but part of that's just because it's pretty difficult to understand. So as we move forward and we advance through the processes of understanding, you know, agriculture and all the different aspects of producing healthy crops and protecting the environment, it's kind of become the next frontier for us to really try to go out and gain better understanding.
Iserman says the complexity of soil health can be difficult to understand, but healthy soil brings many benefits.
One of the big things we look for from having healthier soils is better ability to withstand things such as drought and different changes in the environment and the climates that we're dealing with and everything else that we deal with as farmers on a yearly basis. And then also on the environmental impact side, we look to a healthier soil to reduce nutrient losses, whether it be through tile lines, as well as reducing soil erosion and different aspects of environmental impact that can come from all different directions, as well as just providing a general overall healthier crop, be able to do it with fewer inputs and with overall general less impact on the environment.
The Soil Health Partnership is helping farmers learn more about soil health and practices to improve soil conditions.
It's an initiative from the National Corn Growers Association. In the beginning, we've had help from Monsanto and the Walton Family Foundation. We've added a number of other partners as we've gone along. The program itself, we're working up to a demonstration network of 100 farmers across the Midwest. The farmers enroll a field from 20 to 80 acres, and we set up strip trials in those different fields. By and large, we're looking at practices like cover crop adoption. Some of the fields are looking at no-till versus tillage, and a few fields are starting to look at more advanced nutrient management practices. And we apply these different soil health practices to determine what's happening to the soils over a period of time and what kind of economic impact that has for the farmer.
The Soil Health Partnership will host a webinar on December 15th for farmers to learn more about soil health practices. You can find more information online at soilhealthpartnership.org. Michael Clements reporting.
And we'll be back with more right after this. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, welcome to Inside Agriculture, heard on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Ag News 890, Lisbon in Fargo, North Dakota, and Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1, also Lisbon in Fargo, North Dakota. Well, yield grade. Every day, cattle are valued on it, but few people know its history. A 1960 study of 160 carcasses serves as the basis for the industry-wide equation. Ty Lawrence, an animal scientist from West Texas A&M University, now calls for an industry review.
In that day and in that era, the primary animal was a short-statured, early-maturing Hereford steer, and the close trim of that day to the retail consumer was a half inch on roasts and a quarter inch on steaks and other thin meat cuts. The industry has moved to larger cattle, leaner cuts, and we account for the entire carcass today, something that wasn't done in that original equation.
Today's coolers look much different than they would have a century ago.
So in those original data, the heaviest carcass weighed 900 pounds. On Monday, the average carcass weighed 907 pounds. So we have already surpassed, on average, the absolute end of the spectrum of the cattle that are used to create the equation that we use today.
The animal scientist says it's time to bring that arithmetic into modern times.
We've made great advances in nutritional technology, given that we're now on the eighth version or eighth edition of nutrient requirements for beef cattle. But we're still on version one of the yield grade equation. and it's time to update and to make new advances.
One suggestion, make the premiums and discounts linear rather than thresholds.
One of the things I think the industry really could look forward to is improving the valuation on an incremental basis, such that today a yield grade 3.9 animal on most all grids receives no premium or discount. It's part of the base par value, whereas a yield grade 4.0 might receive a $15 per hundredweight discount.
Lawrence recently completed a research review on yield grade and says the bottom line is that cattle have changed and valuation systems need to catch up. Well, when we come back, by the way, we're taking a break here. When we come back, when it comes to food service, pork is red hot. We're going to talk about that red hot pork when we come back right after this. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture on this Tuesday morning, well, let's talk pork. When it comes to food service, pork, well, it's red hot. Pork Checkoff Director of Market Intelligence and Innovation, Patrick Fleming, has results of recent food service research.
Well, right now we have a lot of good things happening with pork. Right now, pork is the trendiest protein at food service, which we're very excited about. A lot of checkoff dollars have gone into making pork the most trendy item at food service. Right now at food service, the top three items are all pork items. Candied bacon, pork belly, and porchetta are the top three new trend items at food service, which is very exciting.
Now, there is a resurgence of demand for savory products at restaurants and food service. Fleming says bacon has led that trend.
I think this year so far we've had over 650 limited time offers or new menu placements for bacon. So when people go, is the bacon trend over? No, not even close. Because restaurants and food service keep finding new ways, because when they put bacon on things, sales increase. Consumers come in and buy it. The Big King at Burger King, the six strips of bacon on a burger, we're the giving protein. We make other proteins taste better. So that's the cool part about pork, the versatility to flavor. That's what food service loves about us. That's why, you know, we fit into all the food trends.
Ethnic tastes are also in strong demand from food service. Pork is very relevant in that segment, including Hispanic and Asian flavors. More details? Well, we'll check that out next time we do a pork checkoff report. Well, also, when it comes to what's going on out there in that sunflower field, Calvin Trossel, Texas A&M Extension agronomist and spokesperson for the National Sunflower Association, says there are many research projects being done on sunflower rooting systems. Well, he says the research shows that there are 40 to 60 pounds of subsoil nitrates that's sitting below 2 feet.
If you have that, if you knew that, sunflower would be a nice way to go get that. And in fact, what we see in Kansas now is Kansas State soil test recommendations now recommend a standard 2 foot depth soil sample. And that's primarily because they want to capture or record for the producer what the amount of subsoil nitrate is below that normal 6 inch sample depth. And Kansas State and Texas also will fully credit that subsoil nitrate to your crop requirement. So especially if you have a lot of nitrogen deep in the soil, sunflower is one way to go get that and retrieve it, you might say. And then, of course, you're after water if we've got dry conditions. And that's why sunflowers sometimes get regarded as a fairly hardy crop when it comes to dry conditions. If you've got that deep soil moisture, you can go get, you know, a couple extra inches of deep soil moisture with the sunflower root that you would not be able to access, say, with corn or sorghum or soybean, something like that, or wheat.
Trossel points out that if sunflowers are seeking water sources, the roots will go down to as low as 6 feet below the surface. Research is being done in several states, with Texas being a key state for deep soil sampling below 6 feet to as much as 2 to 3 feet, to find cost savings for producers by retrieving that deep nitrogen that may be stored in fields. Well, there it is. That's what's happening today inside agriculture. Same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.